You're listening to episode 81 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Chang.
Am I doing this right? Hi, I'm your host, Yin Chang, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence.
Hey, what's up, Storyteller Tribe? I'm excited to kick off each episode with a fun surprise we've added to the show. I'll be doing birthday shoutouts for listeners who are part of our private Facebook group at the top of our new episodes, and you'll also get a birthday shoutout in our newsletter sent out every Thursday. This week, my team and I would love to wish Rihanna Winningham a very happy birthday. Our private Facebook community is so much fun to be a part of. If you'd love a birthday shoutout, join our group. For listeners looking for an intimate space to check in about your writing and hang out with other writers, this is the perfect home for you. In our group, we also post threads where you can submit your listener questions for upcoming interviews. You'll also get sneak peeks of our publishing calendar for future episodes. And for my craft-focused writers, there is some pretty awesome advice that's being passed around in our group, and not to mention the amount of love, support, and encouragement that's shared in our community. And by the way, we just recently decided that we'll be mixing in some live Facebook videos. We receive a lot of packages from publicists pitching authors for our show, and this will be a really fun way for you to watch me unbox new books from authors we may potentially invite on the show, and you can jump in to chat with me live and talk about the books and the authors. Be sure to join us over at facebook.com/groups/88cups of tea. I can't wait to meet you in there. On to the next part of our intro. If you'd love to support our show and rock some 88 Cups of Tea swag, head over to 88cupsoftea.com/mug to get your limited edition mug signed by yours truly. Thank you so much in advance for showing your love and supporting our show. Now on to our show. Irina Brignall is a renowned screenwriter and novelist. She wrote the Oscar-nominated movie The Box Trolls, starring Ben Kingsley, Elle Fanning, and Simon Pegg. Irina was nominated for Best Screenplay for The Box Trolls at the Annie Awards. Her adaptation of The Little Prince was directed by Mark Osborne and stars Jeff Bridges, Rachel McAdams, and Marion Cotillard. Earlier in her career, Irina was a script executive at the BBC and then head of development at Dogstar Films, where she was a script editor on hit films including Shakespeare in Love, Captain Corelli's Mandolin, I Capture the Castle, and Bravo 2-0, to name a few. She recently debuted The Hawkweed Prophecy, a novel about identity, friendship, and romance. In today's episode, we discuss Irina's career as a screenwriter and her experiences writing and adapting The Box Trolls and The Little Prince. We also discuss what it's like to be a female screenwriter in a male-dominated industry, and Irina shares advice for women discovering their voice and authority in their own profession. We unpack the inspiration behind The Hawkweed Prophecy and what it's like to transition between screenwriting and novel writing. For our craft-focused writers, Irina walks us through how to find inspiration for character traits, how to overcome writing difficult scenes, how to validate and grow your story ideas, and how to build balanced characters to create authentic and genuine relationships in your story. Now let's jump right in. Hey everyone, we have Irina Brignall on the show with us today. Irina, how are you?
I'm very good, how are you?
I am so good. I'm so excited to have you on the show. Okay, so let's start off. Where are you right now?
I am in London in the UK.
As soon as you said hello, I was like, you sound like a voiceover artist.
We feel the same way about you guys.
Well, that's really nice. I had a friend from New Zealand who was like, American accents sound really lazy. Irina, I'd love for everyone to get to know you. You're a renowned screenwriter, and you have your book that was out last year, September 6th, The Hawkweed Prophecy. I'd love to just jump in and ask how you fell in love with writing. Was it something that you fell in love with growing up? Were you reading a lot?
Oh, I was reading all the time. This was a while ago now, so it was pre any devices. Actually, I wasn't even allowed that much TV time. I had my head buried in a book pretty much all the time, non-stop reader, nagging my kids to try and do the same. But there's so many distractions these days.
I know, with the phones and the games, yeah, and the applications. That's funny because that's something that I talk about with my family and my girlfriend. Do you kind of wish that more kids were out there either playing and inventing their own games or out in nature, hanging out more and also reading more books? Look, yeah, at us, how it shaped us growing up.
Exactly. You probably will find it tough to express yourself in writing if you aren't a reader. Whenever anyone asks me about writing, I'm always like, well, start with reading. Just read all you can is the best way. And I think there's something to be said for boredom. When you're a kid and there isn't much to do and you have those long summers, and that's when you start being more imaginative. I grew up in the middle of nowhere, so I did get all that stuff about running around in nature without having to be too careful. It seems like a bit of a different time. My kids are really overscheduled, and it is a bit of a shame. Just think it's a sign of the times.
With your parents, were they educators? It sounds like you grew up in a household that really was encouraging of books.
Well, my dad, in fact, he was a sort of an ad man. So he's a bit like those sort of Mad Men guys. And he was a copywriter and quite a sort of big time, famous over here copywriter. And he retired early. He writes poetry. And so he used to write with me quite a lot and encourage me in that way. My mum's a massive reader and she's a psychologist. And so there were tons of books in the house. They used to cut down on the TV a bit. And I think that's what initially got me towards film, is that it was almost like the screen was slightly more forbidden.
Yes.
but books, we were awash with books. Yeah.
It was like a little temptation that you just had to go and watch it. This is something that I'm always curious about. I feel like we all have that one book that we fell in love with. No matter how many books that we read, there's always that one that really either changed our perspective or really shaped us, whether it's in our writing style or it's just the way we see the world. Do you have a specific author that you're a huge fan of that really changed your life?
Gosh, I've got so many. I had favorite books as a child that I'd read over and over. But I think as a writer, the novelist, one of the novelists that I really admire is Anne Tyler, which probably has nothing to do with the book I've written. I just think the way she so subtly carves a very meaningful story out of the everyday is just phenomenal. I think the book that really changed things for me was when I was about 17, I read Wuthering Heights, and it's probably a bit of a cliche, but I just fell in love with it, and it was so sort of dark and passionate. I was on a holiday at the time. I remember it really vividly, and reading that kind of blew me away. The book I read as when I was on the cusp of becoming a teenager, and I read it so many times, I actually worked on the film version of it as well, was I Capture the Castle. I don't know if you've read that book. It's a very, very British book. It's written by Dodie Smith, who wrote 101 Dalmatians. She was a playwright as well.
Oh, wow.
And it's really quirky, and we did a really small little film version of it when I worked in a particular film company, and I probably read that book like 20 times.
Oh my god, so you must have had the best time working on that film.
I really sort of pressed to kind of get to work on it because I'd been banging on about this book wherever I'd gone to. I'd worked at the BBC and then I was in this independent film company and I was like, we've got to do this book. I felt very lucky and I worked with a lovely screenwriter on it. Yeah.
Now that we're talking about working on films, you studied in Oxford.
I did. I studied English literature, very much in the vein of what I do now.
Knowing that your dad was really well known for his work as a copywriter, I guess your parents were completely supportive in you studying your BA in English literature?
Yeah, I mean, I think they were just really happy I went to university. parents didn't come from that kind of background, but I think they were just thrilled that I got into Oxford. Probably a bit surprised.
I was just going to say, it's not even just any university. It's Oxford University. It's so prestigious, and it's one of the best colleges in the world.
Yeah, I mean, my school just asked me to try for it, and I went for it, and I think we were all kind of amazed. English was always my thing. I'm not so good on the sciences or math, you know, and I think if you're really passionate about a subject, they pick up on that.
I think it's just great to see how your path led you to studying English literature at Oxford. How did you then go from there to screenwriting? Because I don't think you were learning screenwriting in school.
It kind of accidentally. I never really had a plan. I kind of left Oxford feeling very lost and a bit clueless. I remember going to the careers service there and saying I want to do something creative and in the media. And I was very waffly and unsure what I wanted to do. And they said to me, well, why don't you go and do a secretarial course? And I was like, what? I went off and did it and learned to type. And then I had about a year of living at home and being very unemployed and feeling sorry for myself. And I would just continually write letters. And I interned over and over again in TV companies, publishing companies. I wrote a few pieces for newspapers when they'd let me. Finally, I got a job as a producer's assistant. I was probably the most terrible assistant because I'm not an organized person at all. But very quickly, that TV company got bought and he really needed someone to read the scripts. And I was already doing that because that's what I gravitated towards. I suddenly got this promotion where I became the head of development, we call it over here. And I became responsible for bringing projects in and hiring writers and then script editing, the screenplays that we were doing. And I stayed there for a couple of years. And then I got quite high up job at the BBC, went in there quite young and had this development exec position. So before I started screenwriting, I worked on the other side. And then I joined a film company after the BBC. And it was only really in my late 20s, I just got married and my husband was about to go and study in France. And he and one of my best friends basically forced me not to take another job, sort of exec job, and instead start writing. And it meant I could go with him. This is a really lame story. It's sort of not at all purposeful.
It's so cool, though.
I know. It's not very good advice to just fall into things.
Without but it worked out, though.
I had sort of grafted away and I'd read an awful lot of screenplays. I'd never studied screenwriting, but I'd worked on so many and I was really involved as a script editor. I mean, probably bug my screenwriters to help because I'd offer up so much advice and ideas and get really stuck in. And then so when I actually started screenwriting, I knew my way around a script and it came quite naturally to me.
That's amazing that you just learned when you're being thrown into these situations, because I know there's a lot of screenwriters who take classes, who take courses, and I'm talking about full-on film school. And just to hear you threw yourself in, you hustled your way, you worked so hard, and you were so observant in learning what was happening around you, and you just picked it up and absorbed it like a sponge. I'm just in awe.
The BBC, I remember I had this huge carpet bag and I used to carry it back every Friday night and it would have like 20 screenplays in it. And I'd read like 20 screenplays a weekend.
Oh my
Because that was
God.
My job. And there was so much to get through. And then you have the ones they're working on where you kind of do draft after draft. And I learned from all those other writers. It's probably the best training, to be honest.
That is true. That is true.
I've never read a book. I've never been on a course. And I'm sure they can be fantastic. I think you can get your hands on screenplays, or if you can get your hands, best of all, on different versions of the same screenplay, then you can see how they evolve. That teaches you a lot.
That's a really good point about seeing the different versions of that screenplay and learning, too, what goes into a revision. And it's so funny because it ties back to even writing overall, reading. That's the best teacher.
Well, they say that the art of writing is rewriting, don't they? And I think my limited experience of writing a book, I know more about screenwriting. It's certainly in screenwriting, you can do so many drafts and you're having to take on board so many different people's comments. And sometimes it's the art of compromise as well. There's something about the structure of screenplay where you can pick it apart. It's like a jigsaw and you can put it back together. And it's much easier to edit and cut things out than a novel. So in the novels, I tend to do two big passes with the editor, and in the screenplays it can go on for years. I certainly was well practiced in that.
You're like, I've learned a lot of patience with that.
Yes, I was like, when I got into publishing, I was like, this is a dream.
That's so funny. Just for me too, coming from the acting side, sitting in the room during the first read and then the second and then third, seeing how many writers are in the room during these readings with the actors. There was a Disney film I was working on and we read the first revision, the first one that they gave to the actors. But I'm sure by then it was probably like
probably
the 20th or 25th.
Way down the line,
yeah, exactly. Even then, I think there were about 20 writers that were involved with the writing side and the consulting side of what to change up, what to revise, that were sitting outside of the actor's reading circle. It was so intimidating just to see. I'm like, is this project going to go through? Why are there so many people?
Screenwriting or movie making is teamwork.
Yes,
you know,
it's
and
so collaborative.
Just one part of that team, and you play an early important role, but then you get left behind and you have to just move on to the next thing and let it fly. Get shepherded along by you being the actor and the director and so on, and the rest of the team come in and do their bit. Writing the novel is very different in that sense. I felt I was like the whole cast, crew, direct on my project with the help of my editor and my publishers, but it was really nice to stay on board, you know, and see it right through with writing the
How did you transition from screenwriting over to novel writing?
Well, I think I'd always wanted to do it, but I hadn't quite dare express it. Like with the screenwriting, I think I probably wasn't confident enough. I think it's great that sort of young women now are feeling like they can just go straight into it. And I left with a friend of mine, a guy, and on our last day of term, he said, I'm going to be a writer. And I remember thinking, wow, I can't believe he just said that. That's amazing. I had to go and work on lots and lots of people's projects before I had the kind of the guts to do it. And it was a bit the same with the novel, like I'd wanted to, but I had got onto a bit of a roll with the screenwriting and one film was following the next. And I was really lucky. I had an agent who used to work in the film world and she had a couple of clients who were screenwriters who'd written successful books. And she approached me and said, I know your screenplays and I think you should write a book. I remember starting something and then I got another gig gig as a screenwriter and I had to put it aside. And then I had this sort of crazy time where my youngest child got very sick. He's absolutely fine now. We had this horrific time where he was in hospital for a month. And when I came out, I was coming to the end of The Little Prince. I didn't quite have it in me to take another job immediately, and I wanted to take some time out. So my version of taking time out was to write a book. I didn't quite realize how hard it was to write a book. I wasn't answering to anyone. No one was paying me. I didn't have a deadline, and I could do it from home when my kids were at school. The Little Prince, I was working in Paris, and I was going back and forth, and it was quite exhausting. In comparison, it was a much easier, more laid back way to spend my time and for all of us to recover. And I just had this idea for this story. A friend of mine had kind of taken us all away to Italy to stay with an Italian friend, and we stayed in her house, and it was just springtime, and we'd been through this rough period, and this idea just came to me one time, and me and my daughter started sketching the characters from the book. I was talking to her about it, and then I thought, you know what, I'm going to try and write this, and I'm not going to write it as a screenplay or try and pitch it to anyone. I just want it to be mine. And then I came back and I just started writing, and I thought, gosh, this is taking a long time. I would work all day and I'd have like 2 pages. And with a screenplay, I'd probably have so much more. But I sort of plugged away at it and I was really got into it. And I sent the first 100 pages back to that agent. Yeah. And then I was lucky enough for it all to go well, because I know some other writers, I've got plenty of friends who really struggle to get the agent in the first place. So I was very fortunate.
You know, when they're like, everything is just meant to be, everything falls into place.
It did feel a bit like that.
Yeah, it just came off a bit like that. I would love for listeners to have a screenshot of your book, just so that we familiarize ourselves with it for the ones who haven't had the chance to check out your book just yet.
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. I had this idea on this holiday. Then it sort of came to me, and it's about 2 girls who were swapped at birth. I think I was drawn to this idea because for me, my teenage years were so sort of vivid and intense, and I felt very much at times like I didn't know what I was doing, and I didn't know if I fitted in, I didn't know if I quite belonged. And I felt that this idea of these 2 babies being swapped at birth was a heightened way of expressing those feelings. We have a girl called Poppy. They're swapped at birth, and we see how that happens, and we cut to when they're about 15 years old, and Poppy is living in a regular town, but she really doesn't fit in, and weird stuff keeps happening to her. She seems to have these strange powers that she's not in control of, and they make no sense to her, and she's sort of in denial about. On the other side of the country, out in the forest, is a girl called Ember, who is being raised by a coven of what we should call witches, although they're not your typical fairy tale witches. They're sort of women who live outside of society, outside of any men, without any vanity or any sort of modern day pressures that females can have on them. And it's all about sisterhood. But of course, this girl, this fair-haired girl with no magical powers whatsoever, no affinity to nature or healing or the dark arts, feels like she doesn't belong either. And very quickly what happens is Poppy gets expelled from another school, and her father takes a job on the other side of the country. And lo and behold, one day out on the edge of the wood, the 2 girls meet. And what follows is the story of their friendship and what comes between that friendship, but also their discovery of their true origins and who they really are.
Where were you inspired by these specific characters' traits? Did you recognize it in yourself, or were they people that you knew that you kind of infused into Poppy and Ember?
It started for me with Poppy. I guess she has more traits that are in common with me, although really not absolutely, just a few of them. But I wanted her to be, her confusion makes her a bit sort of spiky and a bit defensive. And whereas Ember's confusion makes her feel vulnerable and a little bit timid. And so I really wanted them to contrast each other. So it started with Poppy, and Ember sort of took form around her because they're very, very unlikely friends. It's a story about friendship more than anything else, and the way that you can feel sisterhood to other women without being blood relatives or in fact being that similar. But these 2 girls feel very, very connected.
Is that something that you were struggling with, or it just came naturally to you? Because I know there's some writers who like to map things out and almost lay things out in a certain structure, and others that like to go with it. Was there a certain way that you leaned towards while writing out the characters and their relationship with each other that kind of kept you on track of how you wanted to show their relationship?
What you've got to remember is I really didn't know what I was doing. So when I started this book, it was like an experiment, and I just really loved writing prose and not just writing dialogue and thinking just about structure. So for me, it was a sort of liberation. Like I didn't want to pen myself in, because with screenplays, I really, really map things out. And screenplays are all about structure for me anyway, and structure and character. So I just really loved writing these sentences, you know, and describing stuff and describing the characters' inner thoughts. So it was much easier for me to write the characters in a novel than it would be in a screenplay. Because if you think about it in a novel, you can get inside them, you can let them tell the reader what they're thinking. In a screenplay, you have one hand tied behind your back when it comes to that. You have to use the drama, you have to use the dialogue, or often use what people don't say and what they evade saying. So I tried to take some of those skills I had from screenwriting, but also I had this freedom to really explore, describe their facial expression. I mean, a lot, as you know, a screenwriter has to leave stuff up to the actors to sort of fill in those blanks sometimes. Yeah. I could portray all of that. So I started off writing, and I got about three chapters in, and then I thought, oh God, the thing I didn't want to do, which is map things out. So then I went and did myself a very loose sort of, I call them scene by, of course they're not scenes, they're sort of chapters, but I just did myself a very loose outline, because I really didn't want to make it too rigid, because I have learnt now in both my books that once you really get inside these characters and walk in there, they take you places you have not necessarily predicted. I knew where I wanted to end up. I knew some of the important building blocks. I tried not to be too prescriptive, went with the detour, and that's part of the fun of it as well, I think.
Yeah, just seeing them come to life.
I think that's when you feel the book is worth something, actually. So, and character, in terms of character itself, I think a lot of that is instinctive. I know people probably sit down and write sort of bios for their character and that kind of thing, and I didn't do that. I just had this emotional connection to them. I was lucky in the fact that both of them had been so limited in their lives, and that then neither of them had a friend before. And so a lot of what they're experiencing was the first time they'd ever experienced it. You know, for Ember, when she meets a boy, it's the first time that she's ever laid eyes on a man before. For Poppy, it's certainly the first time she's ever really been in a relationship with a boy or had a friend like Ember. So everything was in a more accentuated way than perhaps in other pieces of writing that I've done.
And what about the scenes? Were there any of the scenes that you found the most difficult to write? I feel like with all writers, there's always that one scene where you're just dreading.
Oh, yes. I had a major scene. I was absolutely dreading writing it. And it's the same for me in screenplays, actually. I dread writing them in screenplays too. I think it's just because it's not my thing. And I think there are other people who do it much better, which is I had to write towards the end this big battle scene. I think quite intimate portrayal of friendship and love and mother-daughter relationships. I felt very comfortable with that. It was all building towards this fairly big climax, and I had to write a battle, and I was just like, oh my gosh, I really don't quite know how to do this. I don't know how much detail to put in. I was trying to choreograph it in my mind, but it was on a really big scale, and I had to write and rewrite and rewrite that scene. It's not based on dialogue, and it's not based on relationship. It was people fighting each other. I found it quite hard.
That is so funny. I feel like you sound like such a peaceful human being. I think for writers overall, whenever they do stumble upon difficult scenes, it's like a fight or flight syndrome. It sounds like you throw yourself into the scene and you just really push yourself to work through all these revisions. I feel like for me, I would have to step back and step away from the work for a bit and not touch it for a while and then come back and do it. I wish I was more like you, where I can go up, face that actual situation and with whatever difficulties I'm having and pummel through with all these revisions.
Each to their own. By that time, I had a deadline, so I had to write it.
That is true.
I didn't think I was being particularly brave. My agent already had taken me on and she wanted to send it out to publish. I couldn't really kind of get to that point. I'd also written about 350 pages by that point, so I was like, I have to get through this. I was wishing that I could call up some sort of stunt director or something and tell me how to do this. You know, you write it badly and then you keep writing away until it gets decent in those kind of moments, and you chip away. And I do think with writing, you must have this where you constantly surprise yourself at what comes out. Your fingers start tapping and it's like your brain is however many steps ahead of you. You're not even really planning to write what you're writing. Where I take time out is I kind of will do a draft and then I have to sleep on it. And then the next morning I'll rewrite it again. I'm not very good at pressing forward. I always go over what I've written the day before.
And then continue on from there.
Connects me back into the swing of it, yeah.
I can totally see that too. It just gives you more of that momentum to pick up from.
Yes.
I relate to that too. That process helps me to read back, whether it's one chapter or like one page before. And then it just gives me that push.
Yes, and you get that forward momentum, definitely.
Exactly. And Irina, what is the second book that you're working on? Can you give us a little snapshot of that?
Sure. It's actually the sequel to The Hawkweed Prophecy, and it's called
Amazing.
The Hawkweed Legacy. And it picks up with the characters where we left off at the end of The Hawkweed Prophecy, which I won't go into too much in case people haven't read it. I really, really wanted to try and make the second book better than the first book, which doesn't always happen with sequels, and I've certainly not in movies anyway, not necessarily. Sometimes it does. So I've tried to expand it. It has a past story as well as a present day story. I think some sort of bigger themes and some more complex ideas in it, and I hope it goes well.
I'm sure it will.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I've only just finished that one.
It's fascinating because you also have that strong, solid background as a screenwriter. So it makes me wonder, is this The Hawkweed Prophecy and the sequel, is that something that you hope to see to be turned into a film? Like you can do your own film adaptation? Is that something that has crossed your mind?
It has crossed my mind, and a couple of people have talked to me about it, and I've had a couple of offers that I haven't quite gone with yet. At the moment, I'm talking to a TV company, mainly TV. I don't know if it'd be films. It could happen. We'll see. I'm being a little bit protective over it.
Of course.
Because I wrote it really as a book, I could have written it as a screenplay initially. So in a way, I've fulfilled that dream. Anything else is a real bonus. It wasn't something I'd sort of set my sights on. I'm just so happy. I mean, I can't quite believe I've got a book with my name on it, just having been that kid who just read so many books.
I can just imagine how your kids are feeling. How did they take the news when you told them and you showed them the book with your name on it?
They'd been part of the whole saga of waiting to get the answers in. And I got a couple of no's at first, and then, "Mommy, don't worry, don't be sad, we still love you."
Oh my God.
So really sweet and supportive. I was really lucky, and it went to auction here and it went to auction in America, and then I got lots of preempts from different countries in Europe. So suddenly I was on this big roll with it, and they were really thrilled. They're very tough. My older two have read it and given very thoughtful responses to it, and hopefully they'll be reading the next one soon.
Oh my God. Especially with family, one person's success is everybody's success. I just wondered if they were feeling that too, because they were there with you in the trenches as you were going through everything.
My mom, who is my biggest fan to the point of embarrassment, she's bought probably most of my sales. She buys books whenever she goes and gives them to people are probably sick of getting it as a present.
Oh my God.
My whole family feel very much a part of it.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. And we do have a lot of listeners who are interested in screenwriting too. I think it's fascinating just hearing how high up you worked yourself in that world. In America, it's still a thing where women really have to fight so much harder to have their place, almost have to work 2-3 times more when they're very, very capable, even more capable than a lot. We still feel like we have to pull a lot more weight just to be given some of the same credit as our men coworkers who don't have to pull as much weight. Is that something that's a little bit different in the UK? How is that like?
I find it a struggle sometimes. It's interesting that my real break when it came to my screenwriting, when I left the world of production, let's call it, behind, and I decided to go out and try and write screenplays, I wrote a lot of screenplays that didn't get made, but you can make a living at that, you know, and it was all practice. But my break came, I wrote St. Gelig, which is from a book by David Almond, a really wonderful book. And it was a female director who hired me on that. Mm. And she really hustled and she really got that film made. It was going to be a big, big feature. It ended up being something for Sky, but she fought for me, I think, actually, because screenwriters are often behind the scenes, and you know, I write, I deliver the thing, sometimes I'm called in for a meeting, sometimes I'm not. I really think that you need the female producers, the female directors, to be hiring female writers, and for us all to support each other. What I now find sometimes is that if I'm sitting in a room and I've got the sort of team around me and the director and the producers and so on, it's almost like my voice doesn't carry as much as a man's voice. And I sort of feel like, actually, there was one stage I was the youngster in the room. I sort of got my jobs very early on, and I felt like slightly an imposter, but I'm not that person anymore. And it's tough sometimes getting your voice heard and having that authority. That's the thing I struggle with. I'm not in an office environment where I'm playing politics and I'm having to fight a lot of females in the workplace do. And, you know, and I've been able to have my children because I'm freelance. I could slip them in there. And as long as I stayed professional and met my deadlines, that was never an issue. For instance, on The Little Prince, I was traveling out to Paris and coming back. And there's all that stuff when you're a woman and you're a mom. I felt like I was going out there and I had to leave this sort of litany of things that needed doing. I'd have to step out of meetings and take call and check my kids were okay and they got to their things all right. And then I'd come back on that sort of Eurostar train, and then I'd have to do things as soon as I got back, and I'd wake up early the next morning and do the school run. I don't want to complain because this is the way I've chosen to do it, and I feel really lucky that I can see a lot of my kids and have this job, this career that I've got going on. I do think a lot of my friends who are in the similar position to me, we have quite a load on our shoulders, and it's quite exhausting sometimes. And that's the fighting that I do. It's not fighting for a position or for a promotion or anything like that. Sometimes just keeping your head above water and that juggling thing, juggling all the time.
We have a lot of listeners who are moms, and they're also trying to juggle their own books that they're writing. A lot of them, their struggles are trying to find time, because again, it's just trying to figure out how to juggle. And the biggest struggle is time. If only we all had more time. But then of course reality hits and it's okay, well, the kids need to eat. I got to take a break now and go get stuff done.
I know, there's going to be food in the fridge, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, okay, they're not really at the age where they can go make their own food yet. Or there's a whole mess in the living room right now. I have to take another half hour. And then by the time I get back to my work, it takes me another half hour to settle in, to just get in that mindset. And then next thing you know, the half day is gone or the full day is gone. Or like a week has passed and it's like, wait, what just happened? For your road specifically, did you have anyone like your mom? Was she able to step in and help you with that in terms of the act of balancing?
My mom still works, actually, so she's doing really well. She does help me as much as she can. I have an au pair. I have to say I've had some good ones and some not so good ones. Because I'm at home, I've never really wanted to go all out and designate everything to a nanny or someone, because it seems silly because I'm here. And actually, I want to do that stuff. I want to do the school runs when I can. I mean, you know, I'm trying to have my cake and eat it in a way.
Yes, of course. You want to be there during their most critical moments, especially.
What I have learned to do, just write every opportunity I have. My book, a lot of it got written when I was in my car. I've got terrible back problems from this, but I'm in my car and my son is playing soccer, you'd call it, and it's between 7 and 9 p.m. at night, and I'm in a freezing cold car and I'm typing away. Or my daughter, a ton of tennis, I'll be on the edge of a tennis court and I'll be typing. But they can get a bit cross that I'm not watching them, but actually I've seen enough in my time and I've got them there. I just take my laptop everywhere and I write wherever I can. I don't do that format of having to get my head into it. That's why I read what I'd done the day before or go through it, and I just have to plow on even when I really, really don't feel like it, which is quite a lot of the time. And I try not to procrastinate too much. You know, you can go and put loads of washing on or empty the dishwasher a lot. I once heard this screenwriter, and he was giving some talk, I can't remember where it was, and he was saying that to get a bit of inspiration or get into his work, he'll go to a coffee shop or he'll Facebook with people or he'll go for a walk. And I'm thinking, gosh, I'll just go to the supermarket or I'll just cook up a meal or... Oh, to have that luxury. But maybe at some point in the future, I'll have that.
Talk about the hustle, right? Oh yeah. My gosh, you are so awesome. But really is true, though. If you want to write, you just get it done. There's no other way around it except to just write.
It's really tough when it's your hobby, when it's something you're doing for you, and it's not a job and it's not a paid job. Like I've been really lucky with the screenwriting. I take the money and I have a delivery date and I have to meet that delivery date. So I really have tons of sympathy that if you're embarking on something and it's a private thing and it's just your dream to write this book or write this first screenplay, that actually trying to fit that in is really tough. There's no one asking you for it. It's completely up to you. It's a bit like me trying to make myself do some exercise, which I'm really bad at.
Oh my God, I'm in the same boat.
You know, that takes a lot of willpower, and it's much, much easier when you have someone who is waiting for you to hand in that draft, because then you have to do it, but you don't have a choice.
I loved all of this. I'm sure the listeners would really appreciate this, because that's also a form of inspiration for them and motivation, just to hear how you got your stories finished and your book, and you just sat in the car. No matter how cold it was, you just went for it.
I do love it, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners love writing as well. And the rest of the stuff I do at home, a lot of it is sort of your ordinary everyday stuff, and bringing up a big family can be hard at times. It can be brilliant, but it can be quite tough. And if you sit down and get lost in this other world, it's a great feeling. And sometimes
Absolutely.
I really come back to earth with a bump and I'm like, oh my God, it's 3 o'clock, I've got to run. I haven't even noticed the last hour go by, you know.
That's right. And I love that because then you also know when you get that lost, you know you're writing the right story as well. That's also one That's part true. Of the struggle too. When you're not sure if this is that story, if this is the one that would be meant to be shipped out into the world. There's so many.
I'm feeling that right now. I've got so many ideas and I don't know which one to do. And, you know, get really into one and I sort of pull back and I get really into another. It's quite hard. It's much better once you are a few chapters in and you know you're heading in the right way.
Is that how you do it? If you have all these ideas circling around your head, do you hear it out and just really stay in tune with what it is that really keeps popping up the most out of all of your other ideas? And then you run with it for a few chapters to feel it out and see how it goes. Is that how you select your final idea of what you want to work on?
To be really honest with you, I don't know. I'll have to talk to you in like a year's time and I'll tell you. Because with the Hawkey Prophecy, that was the idea and I went with that idea. It was just really crystal in my head. The premise was very strong and I just went with it. And I don't think I would write loads of chapters and then I go, no, I'm going to write some more chapters. I think once I started really writing the prose, I'd probably want to feel that this is something I wanted to immerse myself in for the next 6 months, a year. So what I'm doing at the moment is I have these various ideas and I just write loads of thoughts down about them. And then I guess I'm going to have to select one and see. And it might be this time around, it might be my agent saying that's the best one or my publisher saying, yes, we like that. And hopefully I'll get some help with this. I don't know. And I might well do a screenplay next. I've got a couple of potential projects out there. So
oh my gosh, it's so exciting.
Things swimming around. I really don't know quite what I'm going to do next. I've only just finished the other book and I'm grateful to have some ideas. The worst thing in the world is when you have those, your mind's like this blank. Am I going to ever have an idea again?
Just hearing how you have that freedom also to go back and forth between choosing to write a novel or a script or a screenplay. I think that's something in itself too that's really so refreshing to hear and so inspiring too, that there is that freedom of crossing over from one type to another type of storytelling. I think that's so amazing just to hear, hey, the next one, it might be a screenplay. There are so many writers who feel like they have to stay with one form of storytelling without realizing storytelling is storytelling. It's just how you choose to deliver it. And that's cool that you've gotten a grasp of both sides. I think that's amazing.
The more you write, the more you find your voice. That sounds a bit of a cliche, but I think
it's
in my experience, I think it's true. And then you can put your voice to whichever genre or format you feel best suit. I feel very lucky, but I don't want to pretend to your listeners that this just all fell into place for me and I had this plan and it all worked out, because it's been a long time coming. I work pretty hard. I've been in this game a while now. It's come good, but I think practice does make perfect and I'm nowhere near perfect, but I have been writing one for another for quite a while, and you do get better as you go. So I think just keep writing as much as you can. Keep writing and reading.
Oh, absolutely. I love that you mentioned that too to the listeners. I think that was really heartfelt and very much appreciated. Talking about also screenwriting, The Box Trolls is your Oscar nominated movie. So very belated congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you.
So awesome. How was that process like? What was the writing process like for that one? Was it a long journey?
The Box Trolls and The Little Prince are both animated movies. Box Trolls is the first one I did. And then once you do one, I got offered another one. And it's quite different on those ones. They're really collaborative and you start off with a team and the team grows as you're writing. I wrote on The Box Trolls for 3 years and then it took another 3 years or so to be made. They make them in this incredible stop motion way, which takes so much dedication and creativity, but is quite a slow process. But what's wonderful as a screenwriter is often previous to that, you're kind of writing this void. You're writing, and then you hope at some stage you're going to get that green light and you're going to get it cast and there's going to be a director on board. On these projects, when I came onto The Box Trolls, there was a director and there were artists who were, and as I was writing, I'd get sent these brilliant pictures and little models and things, and it was really inspiring. You felt it was happening in the midst of it. Yeah, it's great.
That's so interesting, that whole process, like we were mentioning earlier on, how collaborative and quite polar opposite from writing a book in that way where there's so many people involved and it adds to creativity as well. That is so fascinating. If it's 3 years writing and then the 3 years of the making, so it's 6 years total, that whole process, I'm not sure, did you have to pitch that?
It came to me, it's from a book called Here Be Monsters, and the book is by a British guy, and it's set in a slight make-believe English setting. I think they had this idea they might get a UK writer, and they came. The book is quite a sprawling novel with so many characters and wonderful inventions in it. The job really was to try and carve this piece of drama out to sort of tighten up relationships, and we created the character of the girl in it who isn't in the book. It's quite a sort of loose adaptation. Honestly, if we'd had more hours, there were tons of other crazy stuff in the book that we'd love to have put in. So they came to me. I think I had to pitch in terms I had to read the book and then tell them how I'd go about it and have an interview for it. It wasn't my idea that I had to go in and present to them. It wasn't like a scary pitch.
Okay, because it did sound like they almost had a team in place and then they brought you on. I just wanted to clarify. It's a world that I find so fascinating, screenwriting, because there's just so many ways to go about it. Either you do pitch or you're brought on. With that experience compared to The Little Prince, was that also a similar thing where they had a team set up in place and then they approached you?
Yes. In both cases, it was a really tiny team. It's just once you get going, the team expands. They just hire more artists. And, you know, on The Little Prince, there was Mark Osborne, the director. He'd done Kung Fu Panda previously to that. And the company in France, he'd managed to persuade the family to let them have this very treasured book and try and make a film out of it. They had approached Mark, and he had really thought about it for quite some time and had a sort of take. I got on the phone with him and we had a conversation, and I told him my thoughts and he told me his. And the next thing I knew, he was flying over here to meet me. And then I was flying over to LA to spend a week with him and some other artists there and brainstorm it. And it was a really fun process. Once they approved our treatment, then the team start banding rapidly, and there's a whole, before you know it, there's a whole floor of an office and they're all working on it as you're writing. And then I'm sort of traveling over there and having meetings and so on. It's fun. It's very, very different. I have to say, when you do these films back to back, then there was something lovely about retreating into my little office and writing my book just by myself. It's lovely to go from one to the other. You can get a bit lonely writing a book. Sometimes it can be quite overwhelming writing a screenplay when it's really busy. Both have their pluses and minuses.
You took so much from all of this. You've had so much experience. And I'm wondering if there's any advice that you've received from working through both of your screenplays and then your book, and even before that in the work field too. Any advice that you've gathered yourself from your own observations?
The main thing for me to keep writing, whether it's writing your journal or writing a poem or a song, might be writing a whole novel or a whole screenplay, but to keep going, even if the first one or the second one or the third one doesn't really make it. I mean, I've got a whole pile of screenplays here that, yes, I wrote them and I was paid to write them, but they didn't get made. But what it allowed me to do is really discover that voice I was talking about. I think I've sort of got my own style now. And I'm really glad I got to write my book at the point where I kind of knew who I was and I knew what I was interested in. As a reader, you want to read something that's unique. Think of my early days. I was just finding my way. And that's a really important process. And the other piece of advice that I have to tell myself still is, when you finish something and you've done a first draft, it always feels really complete and really done. And it's quite painful finding out that it's not done and it's not finished. I just tell myself, even when I feel like I've finished, I really haven't. And this is just the beginning. Even though I've edited as I've gone through, I think just because you've reached the end doesn't mean that you've got to go back. You still got to go back in and do the work. I've always found it quite hard when I've gone to that first meeting when I've written a screenplay. And you're so happy to have it done. You've handed it in. It all seems so good in your head. And then you sort of come back down to earth and you're like, okay, now I have to get to work. Now I have to really shape this thing and really strive for it to be the best it can possibly be. As I say, on the Box Trolls, that took 3 years. Perhaps even more, because then the director and everyone were still having a go at it. And with my book, I feel the same thing, is that I was really lucky that I had my editors. And I think sometimes you get a note and it just chimes with you. And if a note chimes, it's usually something that's niggled away at you when you were writing. And it's a great thing to be able to go back and have the chance to make it better.
Irina,
I don't know, I'm probably rambling. But
no, that was so beautifully said.
I haven't really thought about it too much. It's like a sculpture. I think you keep chipping away at it. Sometimes it's hard to finish, I guess, to actually know when you're done. But it's definitely not the first draft.
Irina, I'm so grateful to you for your time and for all of your wisdom that you can just spit out poetically. I love it.
I hope it sounded wise. I don't know.
You did.
Oh, well, I'm so grateful for them to listen for listening to me. It's wonderful.
You're so sweet. Irina, I would love to know, what are you most excited about right now?
Yeah, there's something I really don't know if this is ever going to happen. I've written a treatment for a TV series. I've never written a TV series before.
Oh my gosh, that's exciting.
For a company. And hopefully it will all come good. Maybe it will never make it to the screen. I've done a modern day Swiss Family Robinson. And just because I've just been working on it now, it's sort of in my head and I kind of got to love the characters. And I've done it about this blended family. The dad's this really exuberant guy. He's lost his wife 3 years before and he's got these three kids. And he meets a woman who is just out of a bad divorce and she's got three kids. And they get married, have this wonderful day. And he's determined that they go on honeymoon. They're all going to go on honeymoon together. And they go off on this trip of a lifetime. As you can tell by the title, The Swiss Family Robinson, you can tell what happens and they get stranded. And yeah, producer and I have been talking about setting it on this island, having this stuff happen to them, but also each week cutting back to one character's recent past and telling their story of back home.
That sounds really exciting. I'm going to keep my fingers crossed.
Oh, thank you. I need lots of crossed fingers. Yes.
Thank you for sharing that. I think that's super fun to hear. And please tell the listeners, where can they find you to say hi, to tell you that you're awesome?
Oh, that's very kind. I've only just been initiated into the world of social media, so I am still learning. I'm a bit rubbish at it, but I am on Twitter and I am on Instagram and I need to do way more and I need people to show me how it's done. I am there and I have got a website that my friend very kindly made for me, but I was so useless, honestly, that my friend, she came over to help me. We didn't actually know where the hashtag key was.
Oh my gosh, I love you guys.
Where is the hashtag key on the future? We are that bad. So do bear with me, everyone. But I would love to hear if you've watched any of the films or read the book. That'd be amazing.
Irina, you have been absolutely wonderful. And I am so happy to have had you on. Thank you for your time. You've been so awesome. And you were dropping knowledge bombs left and right. Thank you.
I love that knowledge bomb.
Right?
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a complete pleasure. Thank you.
And that wraps up our episode with the lovely Irina Brignall. Irina, I loved our chat and had a wonderful time with you. Storytellers, I'm so grateful for your support and thank you for listening and joining us as always. Please say hi to Irina on Twitter at Irina Brignall. Irina recommended really helpful resources for you to check out, and we have them all linked up in her show notes page over at 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/Irina Brignall. If you'd love to support our show by rocking your 88 Cups of Tea swag, head over to 88cupsoftea.com/mug to grab your limited edition 88 Cups of Tea mug signed by yours truly. Thank you so much in advance for showing your love and supporting our show. Don't forget to join our Facebook group if you're looking for an intimate community for storytellers where you can check in about your writing and hang out with other cool writers. You can also submit questions for future guests on our show, and we recently added live unboxing and book haul videos. Join me over in our new Facebook group at facebook.com/group/88cupsoftea. I can't wait to meet you in there. Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye.